ओम ज्ञान तिमिरं भस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षु मिलितं येन तस्मै श्री. O great sages, I approve of the punishment that you who are devoted to me have meted out to them. No purport. Text 4. Tadva prasadiyam yadya dhamma daivam parangime tadhityatma kritam manye yad swapumbir asatkritaha. To me, the Brahmana is the highest and most beloved personality. The disrespect shown by my attendants has actually been displayed by me because the doormen are my servitors. I take this to be an offense by myself. Therefore, I seek your forgiveness for the incident that has arisen. Purport. The Lord is always in favor of the Brahmanas and the cows, and therefore it is said, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. Lord Krishna or Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is also the worshipable deity of the Brahmanas. In the Vedic literature, in the Rig Mantra hymns of the Rig Veda, it is stated that those who are actually Brahmanas always look to the lotus feet of Vishnu. Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashyanti Suryaha. Those who are qualified Brahmanas worship only the Vishnu form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which means Krishna, Ram and all Vishnu expansions. A so-called Brahmana who is born in the family of Brahmanas but performs activities aimed against the Vaishnavas cannot be accepted as a Brahmana, because Brahmana means Vaishnava and Vaishnava means Brahmana. One who has become a devotee of the Lord is also a Brahmana. The formula is Brahma Janatiti Brahmana. A Brahmana is one who has understood Brahman, and a Vaishnava is one who has understood the personality of Godhead. Brahman realization is the beginning of realization of the personality of Godhead. One who understands the personality of Godhead also knows the impersonal feature of the Supreme, which is Brahman. Therefore, one who becomes a Vaishnava is already a Brahmana. It should be noted that the glories of the Brahmana described in this chapter by the Lord Himself refer to His devotee Brahmana or the Vaishnava. It should never be misunderstood that so-called Brahmanas who are born in Brahmana families but have no Brahminical qualifications are referred to in this connection. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada makes a statement which would be considered by Hindus in general to be unconventional. He says that Brahmana means Vaishnava and Vaishnava means Brahmana. Now, this means, if we're to accept this as a fact, then this means that smarter Brahmana, they're not Brahmanas. Brahmanas who worship Lord Shiva or other demigods, or those who are not specifically devoted to the worship of Lord Vishnu, they're not Brahmanas. And they'll say, well, they are Brahmanas, they're born in Brahmin families, and you know, maybe about 1 in 100 of persons born in Brahmin family, probably no, actually less than that, actually still follow some Brahminical principles. So, how can we say that Brahmana means Vaishnava? We find others born in Brahmin families who perform rituals and they do puja. They worship different demigods and they follow the Brahminical culture. Why aren't they called Brahmins? Why? What is this dogmatism or fanaticism that is being expressed here? When I say dogmatism or fanaticism, we should understand that that's not what I'm saying. That's what the non-Brahmana, non-Vaishnavas would say. Well, the formula, Prabhupada explains, the formula is Brahma Janatiti Brahmana. One who knows what is the absolute truth, he is a Brahmana. So, Brahma means Krishna. Brahmana means intelligent. So, one who is unintelligent cannot be a Brahmana. And we find in Bhagavad Gita that Lord Krishna says, Kama istai stai hridagyana prapadyante nyadevataha. Antavattu palante sham tad bhavatyaupamedasam. One who is full of material desires worships demigods. Kama istai stai hridagyana. Hridagyana means nashta buddhi, spoiled intelligence. Then antavattu palante sham tad bhavatyaupamedasam. By the very act of worshipping demigods for some temporary fruit, that by that very endeavor, by that very intention, that means that one's intelligence becomes reduced. One becomes in the category of alpamedhas, or poor little intelligence. Now there are certain persons who claim to worship Lord Shiva in a manner that apparently parallels that of the Shuddha Bhakti school. Sometimes when we say Shuddha Bhakti school, that means Vaishnavism. So sometimes people ask, well, if you worship the demigods without material desires, then isn't that also pure? Well, it could said to be pure, but it's not. Because it's not the jiva dharma. It is not the constitutional position of the jiva to be the servant of anyone but Krishna. So to attempt to place our bhakti in the manner that it should be placed at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, if we attempt to do so instead at the lotus feet of Lord Shiva, then that is impure. That is avidhi purvakam. That means not according to the proper system. It is an expression of envy for Krishna, that we do not agree to surrender to Krishna. You say, well, I surrender to Lord Shiva purely. But you cannot do so. The only way to follow Lord Shiva purely is to accept his advice to worship Lord Krishna. But if instead we want to accept Lord Shiva as an independent, as himself, as independently the Supreme, then that is an offense both to Lord Krishna and to Lord Shiva. So there's no question of purely worshipping Lord Shiva in any manner except that of accepting him as a Vaishnava Acharya. And even though you say, well, we're worshipping purely, but what is that purity? You will find, if we look into this Shaiva Siddhanta, or whichever branch of Shaiva Dharma it is, that ultimately they cannot maintain a personal concept, even though it may appear like bhakti. Ultimately they're all Mayavadis. So it's not pure. It may appear to be pure. I'm worshipping Lord Shiva without any desire. But ultimately they desire impersonal liberation, which is, again, it's another expression of envy against Krishna. That we may say, well, I've become free of all material desires. We don't want beautiful women. We don't want to become Lord Brahma or Lord Indra. But that we don't want these things, but we also don't want to serve Krishna. That means we still have envy of Krishna. That we give up all desires, that doesn't mean we should give up the desire to serve Krishna. We should give up all material desires so as to nourish the one proper desire, which is to serve Krishna. But then if we also give up the desire to serve Krishna, or if we fail to cultivate the desire to serve Krishna, then although it may appear that we are very renounced, that we've given up all material desires, but we miss the point. Because the whole point of giving up these material desires is so that we can cultivate the proper desire to serve Krishna. We didn't actually change our position. It may appear that someone who accepts austerities and studies the Vedic literature so as to become liberated, it appears as if they're a transcendentalist. But actually, intrinsically their situation, if they fail to worship Krishna, then intrinsically their situation has not changed. Instead of failing to serve Krishna and simultaneously being a gross materialist, instead they fail to and refuse to serve Krishna, but instead they are an apparent transcendentalist. But the fact of their non-service to Krishna remains the same. And therefore, yena ravindaksha vimuktamaninas vayastabhavat avishuddha buddhaha aruhya kritshrena param padang tatam patanti adho navrita yushmanandana. By their very failure to worship Krishna, they may become very elevated, apparently elevated, by performing many difficult austerities, but ultimately they have to come back to the same position of being a gross materialist, because they never really changed from that position. Gross materialist or subtle materialist, that's the difference between an ordinary bhogvilasi and a kritrin tyagi, or a false renunciate. The only difference is that one is grossly indulging in material activities and the other one is subtly indulging in material activities. Because material means the failure to serve Krishna. That is the ultimate definition of materialism. People think that materialism means to have big buildings and lots of money, and spiritual means to have none of these things. But it's a complete misunderstanding. One can have lots of money and big buildings as long as he does. But if he doesn't think this is mine, if he thinks this is for the service of Krishna and engages everything in the service of Krishna, he's actually on the spiritual platform. Whereas one who apparently renounces everything just by the very act of thinking that he can renounce, he is declaring himself to be a thief. Because if he thinks that, even if he thinks that my 10 paisa kopin, well, nowadays you can't even get a kopin for 10 paisa, it probably costs 10 rupees, but anyway, my 10 rupee kopin, that is mine, I shall renounce it. Then that is an expression of thief's mentality. Because nothing belongs to us. If we understand that everything belongs to Krishna, then one's utilizing the objects of this world or not utilizing is simply on the platform of service to Krishna. Once Srila Prabhupada asked this question to his Gurupada Padma, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that both Rupa Goswami and Srila Ramananda Rai are celebrated as great devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And even it may be, although it's not really our business to poke our noses into the affairs of the great devotees or to try to judge them, but it might even appear that Ramananda Rai's position is even more than that of Rupa Goswami. He was actually in the, if we see the ontological gradation, it's difficult to say who Lalita Sakhi or Rupa Manjari, they're both extremely dear to Srimati Radharani. But Ramananda Rai's position was a very close servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But externally he appeared to be an opulent materialist. Whereas Rupa Goswami, Tyagva Turnama Shesha Mandala Pati Sri Ning Sada Tuchava Bhutva Dina Ganesha Kokarunaya Kopina Kantashita. Rupa Goswami gave up the He was from a similar background like Rai Ramananda. He was very similar position, big minister in the Emperor of Bengal's court. Rai Ramananda was in the, he was the governor of the southern provinces of the Emperor of Kalinga. So they're both from a very similar opulent background, but Rupa Goswami gave it up and accepting only Kopin, Karanga and Kanta. He lived very austerely in Vrindavan, giving up the association of kings and so on. Whereas Ramananda Rai remained in the association of the emperor, Maharaj Prataparudra. And Maharaj Prataparudra also gave him, you, whatever you are earning, you keep, you remain wealthy. So Rupa Goswami gave up family life and Ramananda Rai remained in family life. So how is that? Why did Rupa Goswami renounce all that if it wasn't necessary to serve Chaitanya? Why couldn't he have stayed like Ramananda Rai? Or why didn't Ramananda become like Rupa Goswami? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that a devotee is not attached to anything. He's also not attached to renunciation. What was favorable for Rupa Goswami in his situation to serve the Lord was to accept a life of renunciation. What was favorable for Rai Ramananda to serve the Lord was to remain in that condition. So neither of them considered that should I renounce or not simply on the basis of renunciation per se, but what is best for me to serve the Lord? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur once commenting on the, he quoted from Srila Narottam Das Thakur, who had expressed a desire, Chari Shararosh, giving up the six kinds of nice flavors, different kinds of food. I will live very renounced life in Vrindavan. So quoting this, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur went on to explain that if one actually has this understanding, if one is situated in this understanding, then he can ride through North Gopalapuram, which is part of Madras, which is now called Chennai, in the Gauriamat's limousine, which means a big opulent car. He dressed in Tridandi cloth, the cloth of a Tridandi sannyasi. This appears to be contradictory. Sannyasi riding in an opulent car, riding in any car. Those days sannyasis didn't ride in cars. Even today, that Shankaracharya of Kanchi, that complaint was there against him that, you want to go to China? Okay, but you have to walk. No going in vehicles, because that's the tradition of the Shankara sannyasis, that they should not even use a bullock cart. They can take a bullock cart with them for carrying their books, and the Madhvacharya used to carry his books on the bullock cart, and the bull became Jayatirtha Acharya later. But he himself would walk. That was the tradition. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that if one has this mood, if he's not in the mood of an enjoyer, then he can ride through the city quite openly. Tridanda, riding in a car. Nowadays we think of it as normal, but in those days it was quite revolutionary. And many people complained. But he showed what it means to be an actual Vaishnava and an actual Brahmana. Not simply attached to rituals, but attached to serving Krishna. because all the rules and regulations are meant for serving Krishna. Smartabhya satyakam Vishnu, vismartabhya najatati, sarvaviddhi nishayirasya, etaya eva kinkaraha. All the rules and regulations are servants of the main regulation, which is to always remember Krishna. And just in case we didn't understand that properly, it's also said that we should never forget Krishna. The two things are the same. That doesn't mean the rules and regulations are not important, but they lose their life, they lose their meaning, unless they're done for the sake of satisfying Krishna. All the mantras in the Vedas are meant for understanding Krishna. Brahmana means Vedi, or Dvivedi, or Trivedi, or Chaturvedi. Brahmana means he should have met, actually, to be Vedi means, they say Dvivedi means one who has memorized two Vedas, or Trivedi means one who has memorized three Vedas. But not simply memorization. One should understand also. But the proper understanding is not understanding from karma kandiya vichar, or understanding from mayavad vichar. But proper understanding means vedaischa sarvairahameva vedaha. All the Vedas are meant for understanding Krishna. So without understanding that, one may be Vedi, Dvivedi, Trivedi, Chaturvedi, but practically he's avedi. He's away from the actual understanding of the Vedas. One can train a parrot also to chant mantras, but that mantra will not very much help the parrot. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was discussing, as he often discussed, he was discussing with some people about, he's more devoted, we should all get up and leave the class and go and look at the deities. Being more devoted. Now he was discussing about empiricism, how that cannot reach, how that we cannot understand the absolute truth by the empiric process. So one of the people then asked, then how, if we're to understand the absolute, and they're discussing about what is Maya and Shaktayobad, is not Shakti the ultimate? So he was giving a long elaborate explanation how Shakti means mother, but if we don't recognize the father, then we cannot understand the mother properly, it's incomplete. And mother is incompetent to give life without the father. And mother is only the via medium, she is not the owner. He was giving this example also. The child comes first from the mother, but the owner of the child is the father. Of course, nowadays the law is different. When they have a divorce, the child goes to the mother. But in Vedic culture, there's no divorce. Anyway, he was giving all these examples. And he was saying that as long as we accept the mother, but we don't accept the father, then we will be caught in material desires, because one approaches the mother only for fulfillment of material desires. Give me this, give me that. So then someone was asking, then, well, how can we get free from material desires? And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the answer is by mantra. Mantra is that which uplifts the mind. And then the person said, but we're all chanting mantras, because in those days Hindus used to follow some cults. So more or less everyone had a guru and they had mantra. Everyone had their own mantra, whatever it might be, their guru pradatta mantra, which was considered sacred. But then Bhaktisiddhanta said, so he said, well, everyone's chanting mantras. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, then no one is chanting mantras. Because mantra, that means divyam jnanam yato dadyat. Mantra is received through diksha, which is a process of receiving transcendental knowledge. So if one simply receives a mantra, but he does not receive transcendental knowledge, then it becomes a lifeless mantra. There's no life. It's just like a, something like you, something like a camera with no battery. Nowadays, it doesn't work. Of course, they used to have old mechanical ones, but anyway, just giving you an example. Does it, or a camera without a film. It has no meaning. Looks good, but it has no meaning. So, even if the guru does explain something, but if he doesn't explain the absolute truth, then he's not divyam jnana. If he's shakta, he explains shakti without explaining shaktiman, then that's only on the material platform. To attempt to understand Shakti without understanding Shaktiman means to come to the material platform. So unless one receives mantra properly in parampara, and not only mantra, people are running, give diksha, give diksha, give diksha. But who is interested? You have to see who is interested to receive transcendental knowledge. Without that, diksha is meaningless. Unless one is prepared to hear transcendental knowledge and apply that in one's life, then there's no meaning to diksha. We think someone's coming and making a show of chanting Hare Krishna for a few months. Okay, give them initiation. But we'll have to see. Are they chanting? Who is chanting? That mantra means Hare Krishna mantra also. That has to be accompanied by divyam jnanam. The life of the mantra is transcendental knowledge. The two go together. Vidya badhu jivanam. The life of transcendental knowledge is the mantra. But the mantra also required to understand, to actually chant Hare Krishna, we have to understand what is the divyam jnanam, bhagavat tatva vijnanam. Otherwise, if we chant without hearing, then almost inevitably we will be chanting not shuddhanam, or not even attentive shuddhanam, but namaparat. If we think, I'm chanting Hare Krishna. Oh, someone asked me to chant Hare Krishna. Alright, I'm chanting. But I'm doing Devi Upasana. So, alright, I'll chant Hare Krishna. First I'll do my Devi Upasana. And then after I'll chant Hare Krishna. Daily. But that becomes namaparat. If we think that chanting Hare Krishna is an adjunct to Devi Upasana, then that becomes namaparad. And there are so many namaparads. Therefore, at the time of giving nam, it is a tradition that the person taking harinam on a formal basis, they are instructed in what are the 10 offenses against the holy name. Because if one commits offenses while chanting the holy name, then the effect of chanting won't be there, and actually even the chanting won't be there. It'll be there. Harinam means that which is received through antaranga shakti. But if we remain on the material platform of Bahiranga Shakti, then that Naam, that is not Naam. Harinam is Golokera Premadhan, Harinam Asankirtan. So if we want to convert Harinam into something material by our mental concoction, then that chanting the holy names won't have the effect of chanting, which is Chaito Darpana Marjana. It will not cleanse the heart. That's why we see so many Mayavadis, they're also apparently chanting Hare Krishna. But they don't get the effect of chanting Hare Krishna. They don't develop love of Krishna because their chanting is on the mundane platform. They don't understand the difference between spiritual and material because they don't want to. Therefore, they approach Mayavadis. They are inclined to approach Mayavadis because they want to be cheated by Chidjara Samanvayva, the Mayavad attempt to harmonize the spiritual and the material. Everything is spiritual. It's all spiritual. That means they don't know what spiritual means. So that means everything, they're seeing material as spiritual, and everything spiritual is material. They don't know what is spiritual, so they say everything is spiritual. Everything is God. That means they bring God down to the material platform, and even their so-called spiritual activities, it's all mundane, because they have no knowledge of what is actually spiritual. They don't differentiate between spirit and matter. They want to make it all one. Therefore, their so-called spiritual activities, they're also mundane and offensive to Krishna. Therefore, spiritual life begins with hearing, and not hearing. Actually, Leela Katha, that comes later. First one has to hear what is Sambandha Gyan. Who are we? Who is, or what is the Absolute Truth? What is our relationship with the Absolute Truth? First that has to come. If we like to hear Leela Katha without hearing Sambandha Gyan, that is another kind of cheating. Because, again, it's the Mayavadi idea. Everything material is spiritual, everything spiritual is material. So we're already spiritual, and therefore we can hear Leela Katha. But there won't be proper understanding, because we don't understand Krishna's superiority, and therefore we'll consider Krishna to be material, because we have no knowledge. We only have knowledge of material, and falsely think that it's all spiritual. Or Krishna's very spiritual. Very spiritual manifestation of the oneness of everything. All crazy ideas. Mayavadis. So first, the wrong ideas have to be battered out by repeated hearing and understanding. We are not the body, we are not the enjoyer, we are the servant of Krishna. Then only one becomes eligible to hear Leela Katha. Then one becomes eligible to be an actual Brahman. Brahmana is very dear, here it's mentioned. Very dear to the Lord. Why? Because he knows who is Krishna, and on that basis worships Krishna, dedicates his life to Krishna. The actual symptom of one who knows Krishna is that he has no other interest in life but serving Krishna. Now, in our society, it's very good, there's emphasis on formal education with Bhakti Shastri courses and so on. So one may go to the Bhakti Shastri course and pass and get a certificate. But the real certificate will be seen in our life. If we are prepared, or if we're enthused, or if there's no question in our minds that we just have to serve Krishna, that means Bhakti Shastri. Otherwise, to amass information in our heads and regurgitate it on the page on some piece of paper. That in itself does not constitute knowledge of Shastra. Knowledge of Shastra is manifest in one's desire to serve Krishna. And therefore, if one is a Brahmana, very knowledgeable in Shastra, that, if he's not a Vaishnava, the position is not laudable position. Shad karma nipano vipra mantra tantra vishara daha. A Vaishnava guru nasyat Vaishnava svapacho guru. Even if one is very expert in all the karma kandya rituals, but is not a Vaishnava, then he cannot be a guru. Whereas if one is a Vaishnava, even if he's born in the most wretched family, then he is a guru. There's no question, is this person fit to be a guru, this, that, the other. If one is a Vaishnava, then he is a guru. Vaishnava is guru. Not that can he become a guru. One doesn't become a guru. No one becomes a guru. One's Vaishnava automatically means must be guru. And then we have to see what Vaishnava means also. Vaishnava means Brahma Janatiti Brahma, one who knows Krishna. That's manifest in the life, how one is dedicated to serving Krishna. How one has no other thought but to serve Krishna. So such a person is very dear to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this or comment? Yeah. Hand up at the back. Is it? Yeah. We have the mic, cordless mic. Vaishnava on the Kanishtha of Kanishtha Adhikar may also become a guru. May become, but his disciples may not get very proper guidance. That comment is also done. Be guru means he may perform the function of guru. There are many words like devotee, guru, which they have to be understood by the context in which they're said. One who chants the holy name of Krishna once is a devotee. Everyone is a devotee. So these statements are true, but devotee, Vaishnava in the real sense of the term, means one who is fully surrendered to Krishna. Kanishtha Adhikari may also be called a Vaishnava, but his Vaishnavism is not fully manifested. So, Kanishtha Adhikari can also be a guru. For that matter, the mother and father are also considered guru. But Purna Guru or full guru is one who gives Purna Gyan. So Kanishtha Adhikari by definition is not complete in knowledge. So it can be a guru, but not to the fullest extent. Also, at the back, mother and father can also be guru, but to some extent, but unless they have full knowledge of Krishna, they cannot be full guru. Hare Krishna.
I have experienced God giving the Lila. I have not tried. I will cure.
Without hearing Leela in lectures, the heart becomes dry. Without, if it's only philosophy, then the heart becomes dry. Stories of Krishna. Well, maybe you didn't understand what I said. I said Leela Katha, which in a general understanding, Leela Katha means to explain only Leela. Topics of Krishna should be discussed, but we should discuss them in the manner that our acharyas discuss them. Prabhupada in his lectures mostly would speak philosophy, but he would also bring in points from Krishna's pastimes, but he did so in a manner that explained what is the Leela. Leela Katha, as it's generally understood in India, means someone comes and simply speaks the Leela with very little or no explanation, and it's told as some kind of story for the quasi-spiritual entertainment of the hearers. So we should hear Leela, but in the way that our acharyas have explained it. Not in the manner of these cheap so-called Bhagavat Katakas, or those who explain Bhagavat. Their explanation is useless, and that we can see. They're speaking on Bhagavat. People come, they listen, and they go back, and there's no change in their lives. So what is the use? They listen to Bhagavat, they go home, they drink tea, and they watch TV, and their life goes on as usual. So what is the use? They may say it was very sweet, and all this philosophy is very dry. But we have to see, they like sweetness. How many spoons of sugar in your coffee? That's their understanding of sweetness. Mundane.
Hare Krishna, how one can realize that choosing the Guru is on the sentimental platform, or is it because of the conscious voice?
Choosing a Guru. Are you going to choose a guru? Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Abhij. By the mercy of Krishna, one gets guru, who is fortunate. By the mercy of guru, one gets Krishna. There are directions in Shastra how to recognize guru, but we don't find choosing. One should recognize who is Guru, but it's not a matter of, you know, like choosing 11 players for the Indian cricket team. Even that, it's based on qualification. It's supposed to be. The fortune to have a Guru is received after many millions of lifetimes by the mercy of Krishna. There's another question here. What is the question? How do we know what's serving Krishna and what is not serving Krishna? Serving Krishna or? Anyone here? Working towards serving Krishna.
How do we know the Guru? Serving Krishna at the moment? Or?
Well, we should never think I'm serving Krishna. We should never think I'm so qualified that I'm serving Krishna. But we should think that I'm attempting to serve Krishna through his devotees. Who is serving Krishna? Lalita Vishaka Adi Jato Shaki Brinda. These Lalita Vishaka, Chitra, Ranga Devi, Sudevi, they're serving Krishna. Mother Yashoda, Chitrak, Patrak, they're serving Krishna. So if we can think, if I can have the opportunity to attend to serve the devotees of Krishna, that is a better understanding. We say serving Krishna, the dharma of the jiva is to serve Krishna, that is correct. But how he does that? Through the devotees of Krishna. Another way of answering is that our actual devotional service begins when we surrender to Krishna. That is the meaning of initiation. Dikka kale bhakta kare atta samarpan. Unless and until we surrender to Krishna, then that's not really service to Krishna. That's motivated. I'll get something back. But real service to Krishna is not expecting anything back in return.